Good evening and thank you all for coming. Tonight, the Booksmith is very pleased to welcome Lenny Kay and Patti Smith for reading and a book signing to celebrate their newly published works. It was a magazine article about music published by Lenny Kay more than 30 years ago that brought Lenny Kay and Patti Smith together. Each of tonight's authors, as a writer, performer, musician, and recording artist, has been intimately involved in the intersection of the written word and music. Their many accomplishments in these fields are a testament to their intentions. Lenny Kay is the author, most recently, of You Call It Madness, The Sensuous Song of the Croon, a study of Russ Colombo and other popular vocalists of the 1930s. Patti Smith's new book of poems, her first in more than a decade, is Auguries of Innocence. Please welcome Lenny Kay and Patti Smith.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I have a great affection for Haight-Ashbury because in 1967 I came out here in a 56 Ford with my good friend Larry Block and thought I'd found paradise, and I guess I had. I'd like to do a couple short readings from a rather large work that took me several years of living in the past. It's the story of Russ Colombo, who I would bet probably nobody knows about, and I didn't know too much about either when I started, but this is the story of how we met. It was love at first sight. Theme song. I'm cruising along the interstate when I first hear his story, pre-dawn. We are introduced randomly over the airwaves, radio on the far side of the dial, the hindsight of fate. I could have been on another station or tuned out. He might have lived. There are the letters to his mother, his association with Carol Lombard, the dark, husky grain of his voice, a nostalgia for a moment I have never known firsthand, have yet to experience. He intrigues me, the intriguer. I can't forget the night I met you. Memory's overwhelming obsession. It's all I'm dreaming of. All what every woman wants. You call it heads or tails, madness, love. Is there a choice? He's a baritone with orchestra. Baritone. The way of the crooner. He lives for you. There is no existence without your presence. I know my heart won't beat again until we meet again. All feeder Zane, my dear. Take a photo. It outlives you. A shot, set and shoot. A match sparking on a cocked hammer. A pair, as dueling pistols go. The complete set. They're meant for close firing, one-on-one, not random protection or the anonymous carnage of war. This is an intimately twinned weapon, each meant only for the other. The you of duel, the total absorption, the ultimate mating. Me, you, you, me. Which is to be who? We could even trade places across this table that separates us. That is our intention, to penetrate and become you in much the same way this light becomes you, or that color becomes you. It is the becoming that interests us now. This could be a smoky nightclub at 3 a.m., the Brown Derby or Danny's Hideaway, band jugling in the background, he leaning across the table to ignite her cigarette with a silver lighter, a flared glint. The pinpoint reflection from the lighter intersects the white light flash of a photographer from Screenland snapping an exclusive photo. For a moment, they're framed by what seems a backlit silver screen, the blinding bulb glare of looking into the mouth of a Klieg, a still projected. Neither notices because they're in full linger, time braked until its slowing motion is combusted by the Nova Beam flame edging them each toward their spotlit other. Duel. He could feel their bloods roaring as he opened his eyes on her, when he sang. He played the gypsy instrument and came from the hot countries. There were three O's in his given name. He had darkened in the Gibraltar sun of Hollywood, even as he had lightened under New York's noon moon. He spoke the romance of Latin, the language of chimera, as in Latin lover, the Romeo of song, wherefore art the next Valentino, the knowing ah before but I call it love, and then the baradas, the croon, a most sensual singing. At first a slight suggestion that grew to haunt my mind. 'Twas that eternal question. True love is hard to find. And then the day I met you, my love I had to share. I built my world around you. Somehow you made me care. I can't forget the night I met you. That's all I'm dreaming of. Now you call it madness. Ah, but I call it love. You made a promise to be faithful by all the stars above. Now you call it madness. Ah, but I call it love. My heart is beating, it's still repeating. For you, honestly, and now I'm praying that you'll keep saying that you'll come home to me. You made a plaything out of romance. What do you know of love? Now you call it madness. Ah, but I call it love. Now you call it madness. Ah, but I call it love.
Russ Colombo. Thank you. Had a very nice experience today. I went to the Castro Theater and saw the Valentino film that they had there. Anybody there? It was really exquisite. I know they have these silent film things there on a regular basis to hear the great Wurlitzer in that beautiful theater, to see the silent movies up on the screen is bigger than life. It was a really wonderful experience, and I urge all of you to go down and see the pre-talkie of your choice when it comes there. One of the pleasures of this book is I got to wander around the period 1928 to 1934 to total tangent. I don't read this much. Usually I introduce the next song by reading the Chopin tangent, but this is a little thing about Rudolph Valentino, who, when Russ Colombo was in the early silence, he made his film debut in a silent movie in 1928, directed by Cecil B. DeMille. He couldn't get work because they thought he was too Latin and thought he was too much like Rudolph Valentino. Valentino's allure is a mixed blessing for Russ. It types him. A genre of star, but a swordsman who cuts both ways. The Latino lover, machismo and dandyism rolled up in one. Are these cross purposes? Valentino rose to prominence as an Argentinian tango dancer in The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. He never played Zorro. Instead, we remember him as the Sheik, an enrobed Bedouin from the other side of the Mediterranean, a Moorish hint of harem, the darker hue. Not wholesome like Doug Fairbanks or Ronald Coleman, professing virtue ever gallant, the asexual Robin Hood. The Latin would take advantage, using the opening as gateway. Their motives differ, one to resolve, the other to entangle. The studio heads are still wary of Valentino, his puff sleeves, his wristwatch. Worn as a bracelet, it seems a womanly touch, the effeminate symbol of plunder, the fetish of capture. When he stars on screen, he is known to be especially responsive to his female leads, so much so that he allows them to set the pace of performance, mirroring their mood and energy and projection. With Gloria Swanson, he overdramatizes, gestures extravagantly, and are the cameras rolling, Mr. DeMille? That is the most powerful image of silent film acting principles to remain in the common consciousness. Nazimova, in Camille, hardly allows the camera to cut from her to him, draping the lens in gauze, transfixing the spotlight. Nita Naldi hypnotizes him with an unwavering stare, a man who cannot care for any one woman. First in the Castilian Blood and Sand, then in Cobra, where Rudolph plays the Italian Count Toriano, from Toreador to Toro. He steals their scenes. It is his way with women. They fascinate him, as that cobra does its victim. Alone from night to night, you'll find me. Too weak to break the chains that bind me. I have no shackles to remind me. I'm just a prisoner of love. For one command I stand and wait now. From one who's master of my fate now. I can't escape cause it's too late now. I'm just a prisoner of love. What's the good of my caring if someone is sharing those arms with me? Maybe she has another. I can't have another, for I'm not free. She's in my dreams, awake or sleeping. Until my life her draw keeping. My very soul is in her keeping. I'm just a prisoner, I'm just a prisoner of love, of love, of love, of love. Thank you. Bing Crosby is probably one of the most important song figures of the 20th century. Sometimes we refer to him as a little grandfatherly because we forget that before Bing Crosby, singer sang one way, and after Bing Crosby, singer sang a whole different way. And if you listen to Elvis Presley, to name one, you can hear a lot of Bing in him. Certainly underrated in a certain way. And one of the great experiences of this book was listening so much to Bing when he was a blue-eyed, sensual being. You got to hear just how great he is. Him and Russ came up together. They were the Battle of the Baritones. In 1931, Russ was in New York. Bing came to New York. They had dueling radio shows. And for a time, they were neck and neck. Unfortunately, I don't have time to go into all 9,000 pages of this book, but Russ had a very strange demise and end in 1934 and never got to fulfill any of the promise that he might have had, and Bing Crosby, of course, went on to become Bing Crosby. This is about his theme song, from a chapter called Blue and Gold. It is the moment when birds begin their song, expecting the sun. Night catches a gleam from beyond the horizon. It's time to sleep or wake, depending on who shares your bed. This is dawn, not dusk. Light's time lapse as important as its shading. The gradual addition of day's color is contracted by the slow leaking removal of twilight in the evening. The air thinned, drained. The lingerie of atmosphere is removed from the night sky. Disrobed, the universe is unveiled in all its wonder and terror. Someone waits for me is the reassurance that the sun will rise anew. Where the blue of the night meets the gold of the day is not only a song of love, but an expression of religious faith. By the end of October, Bing has chosen it as his hymnal theme, his name inscribed as one of the writers alongside Roy Turk and Fred Allard. On the day that he records the song, they take it twice. The first is the generally released version, though Crosby will record Where the Blue of the Night at least once each decade from now on, sometimes more than once. This version is the only one that will be enhanced by Eddie Lang, the great guitar virtuoso whose lilting arpeggios bring out the pronounced waltz, a pendulum to the melody. Bing sings the first verse, not surprising since he has contributed to the finished version. It gives the song less an abstract air of waiting. Instead, the mood turns nostalgic, even melancholy. Why do I live in dreams of the days I used to know? You can picture him observing light he has traveled years to watch, like a spool of film unreeling, knowing what's already happened. The vantage radiates from heaven, a universe within the universe of a beloved's eyes, leading to the unichorus. The gold of her hair crowns the blue of her eyes. Night sun like a halo around the moon. It is simply one of the most beautiful songs ever written. And it's my pleasure to sing it to you now. Where the blue of the night meets the gold of the day, someone waits for me, and the gold of her hair crowns the blue of her eyes like a halo. Tenderly, if only I could see her, oh, how happy life could be. Where the blue of the night meets the gold of the day, someone waits for me. Why must I live in dreams of the days I used to know? Why can't I find real peace of mind and return to the long ago? Thank you.
Ba 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 ba. That's the croon. If only I could see her, whoa, how happy life could be. Where the blue of the night meets the gold of the day. Someone waits for me. Bing Crosby. Thank you so much.
I like the name of the store. Actually, I'm very happy with, and be nice to read you a couple of the poems. I haven't really read these poems very much live yet, so I'm still getting acquainted with them, so you'll be part of my getting acquainted process. Well, I'll start with this little poem called The Love Crafter. And The Love Crafter was written with three of my favorite fellas in mind, Ralph Nader, Johnny Appleseed, and H.P. Lovecraft. I'd be happy to go to the prom with any of them. I saw you, who was myself, slightly stooped, whistling mouth, with leather sack and breeches brown, striding the naked countryside, with summer bones long and dry, into the breath of our glad day, mid-afternoon, the longer night, as you tread, bareheaded, bright. I saw you, a wraith bemoan, stir the fires of the ancient ones, scarred with sticks, palm and haw, as the nectar for their script. I saw you walk the length of fields, far as the finger of providence, far as the mounds that we call hills, ranges cut from the heart of slate. I saw you dip into your sack, scattering seeds where they may, as the woodsman hews his way through oak and ash and variant pines, for writing desks that shall reflect a sheaf of lines that speak of trees, all sober hopes required within, all drunkenness as sacred swims. I saw the book upon the shelf. I saw you, who was myself. I saw the empty sack at last. I saw the branch your shadow cast. is a little poem called To His Daughter. And I wrote this for my niece, Simone, when my brother Todd passed away. What is the heart but a small hand of agonies? What is the immobile stag but a blessing disguised within the patience of a book? Little one, set down your hymnal, rest it upon your knees. Tears may stain the fragile leaf. Let them fall, let them fall. Your father has rushed forth in a column of mist. Now you seek him in a column of words, water, and stone. He is here, little heart. The stag fell under the stroke and into a blackness so bright as to fold light. Here, pressed between him and him, a perfect thorn, the spear of your father's love. The heart faltered and fell, the red-skinned heart. He is the gust that lifts a bit of sail to press your cheek. Wipe the tears, a bit of sail without moral, turning like an apron upon a cloud. This is a little poem called The Oracle. And I actually wrote this poem looking at this photograph on the cover. The cover photograph is a Polaroid I took when we were on the road. We were playing in a big club in Hamburg. And I noticed this door, and I was exploring, and there was another tinier club within the big club, but it was boarded up. And I went down in there, and it was really dusty. It was like the Twilight Zone, had the old chairs and tables, and been there for years, just covered with dust. And along the wall, for no reason I could really comprehend, were these friezes. Well, I guess a sculpture, except they were, you know, carved into the wall of children and cherubs. And you couldn't really see them, really, because most of them were in the dark. But I got a match, and I just was able to get enough light to take these two children. And they fascinated me. Anyway, I was staring at them, and this little poem came in my head. So it's sort of for them. He was a stone boy divined by a sister. She left standing while he by the rim played with a ball the color of water, gazing all reason therein. He was summoned to the Sibylline Baron, carried by sweetness his mouth drew the spring. They rejoined through the ball of water, patterns foreshadowing. Darts of fortune scattered unnoticed, flew like the raven in a twisting scrawl. His transitive senses he left to his sister. Her tears were the color of Stone Boy's ball. Funny clapping for poems. You don't have to put so much effort in it. This poem I writ the day, it was the first day of spring, and it was the day that the Americans invaded Iraq. The day that we went into Baghdad. And I remember it quite well because we had the TV on and I could hear the news, and I had a really horrible migraine. I woke up, and it was the first day of spring, and we were invading, and I get this terrible migraine. And I hope you never get them, but if you ever got them, you know that they're really like a nightmare, and they go on for like 18 hours. And you have to stay centered because you can feel mad. And one of the things that helped me sort of stay in some Zen state was to work on this poem in my head. And I kept thinking of a couple of different things. Well, the news kept filtering in, and it was just my mother's birthday, and my mother had just died. And my mother used to get horrible migraines all the time, so I was thinking about her. But I was also thinking about Virginia Woolf, how she got migraines for like 3 weeks at a time. And I was thinking, well, I'm really lucky. This is only going to be about 18 hours. So, you know, I really tried to think like that. Okay, it's just like, it's just as long as a flight to Japan, you know, I can, I can. Anyway, this is the poem that came out of that. Called Birds of Iraq. March 20th, awake spring. The birds are silent. It is happening again. I rise yet cannot rise. I take to my bed, wind the sheet about my head. It is coming on, a nerve storm triggering the current source of suffering, stones pelting the human spring. And I am myself, and I am another, and now my mother stretched retching in a bucket fan spinning overhead, her children in a row, observing by the door with scientific wonder. They've seen it before, no dinner, no story, hammering the wall, wet cloths and balm, henna strands soaked in sweat and loosening her sundress, barely casing toppled flesh, howling, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, my head, I, the eldest, administering in dutiful silence, condemned as I am now, administering myself, grasping the towel, the storm in the air is also my brow. Yesterday, the 19th, her birthday, St. Joseph's Day, she will not return as swallows, to perch on a rock in Capistrano with the casual symmetry of a setup, a shooting gallery, bird heads plopping, basket of ironing that I will have to do, throbbing images, melodies looping, mother wailing our childish games. Can I have some peace? Can I have some peace? Can I have some ice? What are they doing, wild little mice, bombing the first day of spring? Baghdad, the city of peace, the caliph and the thief. I remember nights swept by the sea. I read the waves but never ventured in. The polio epidemic, and Indians don't swim. They worship the tides, and they are coming in. Virginia, praying for night, refusing to be black, for the moon is full, spilling the skylight, dripping voices. Or are they birds? Why did they cease chirping? When will I cease retching? And how did my head learn to swim? The equinox passed, she marched to the river. A letter for L, a letter for V, stone by stone, the ring ousel and starry rooks, the weeds floating, the pitted mirror, a glimpse of gone, a quiet hand twisting a sheet between her teeth, pleading amnesty, whispering, nervous hummingbirds, dreaming of a silent Saint Remy and the impossible peace, hammering inventory, ruthless embroidery, painted trays, and the ambulance spattered in Julian's blood and matter, palette, knife, discard possessions, cut hair, rose-growing annuals, thorny hair would not stop piercing her scalp, thick-walled gardens, must cut hair, Vanessa in heaven, Thackeray's great glass fronted cabinet. It was a dream. It was her head. It was her hammered head. And she wonders, how could I think such a violent thing? How could I think such a violent thing? And Buddha was unaware of Isaiah, and Isaiah unaware of Heraclides. Yet all existed at the same moment. And who exists as we exist? Fingers, inch by inch, spread the country of her bed through the window, shattered cabinet glass, shams wet with tears, spittle and sweat, desperate eyes clasping vines, counting beans, the murmur of the leaves, a history of the world written on the humps of broken beasts. The birds are silent before they cease, before the bough breaks. I rock, spring awake, bombs fall like fruit, the peach trees lining the boulevard behind the mosque in flames, the hoopoe, the turtle dove, showering remains, splattering sheets, children toting guns, women soldiering, and I am not them, wrapped in muslin, with bric-a-brac flying, no connection, no culminating piece of action, no end, no end. Over the Tigris and Euphrates, the helicopters drop leaflets for the people to eat. They paper the moon, the hammered mine. What century is this? Truly the last, as camels race, freed from embroidered vests and leather saddles and sacks of spice and water gourds. They run and the sun explodes. The Lamb of God bleats. Goats separate from the sheep. Their beards are woven into scarves, adorning priests and freaks, camels in the dust, astonished by their wounds and their racing minds. Atta, Allah, Bedouin name, their small ears lined with fur to filter dust and sand. Double row of curly lashes shielded their great, large, soft eyes from the desert sand. Hair they shed in spring, highly sought, for artist brushes, Vanessa's, Duncan's. The band tightened around my head, slid and circled my wrist. I couldn't write, I couldn't grasp a single thing, not word, not world, just time beating a long, fragile string. When you snap a neck, something stops, turning in a jewel box beneath a hammered lid. We met in the spring house, enacted our play, slept in a tent of sheets, and dreamed of the desert. We heard the call to prayer, and the sky was magic. Men were leading camels. We knelt in the thorny scrub, and when I awoke, there were scratches on my knees. And never again will vision be so acute that dreams could produce blood, a thorny path littered with wings. If we tape them to our shoulders, surely we could fly. We would be free, like the hoopoe, like the curlew, singing in spring. Are you coming, my sister? Are you coming? Mother's better. We are flying on our own, flapping up and down, discarding sweaters, bearing arms. Oh, to be so small.
Song is just thought in relation to the title. Of course, the title was taken from a poem by William Blake, and this is a song, little salute to him.
In
my blanking year, I was so disposed toward a mission yet unclear. Advancing pole by pole, by chin breathing to my ears, obey the simple code. One road was paved in gold, one road was just a road. In my blanking year, such a woeful schism, the pain in my existence was not as I envisioned. Boots that tramp from track to track, worn down to the sole. One road was paved in gold, one road was just a road. In my blanking year, temptation yet a hiss, just a shallow spear, robed in cowardice. Brace yourself for bitter flack, for a life divine, a labyrinth of riches never shall unwind. The tears that bind the pilgrim sack are stitched into the Blakeyan back. So throw off your stupid cloak, embrace all that you fear, 'cause joy will conquer all despair in my Blakeyan year. In my Blakeyan year. Mercy, I have a human heart, pity, a human face, and love, human form, divine, and peace, the human dress. Mercy and pity and peace and love, we pray in our distress. But mercy shall embrace, mercy shall embrace, mercy shall embrace. Eve of all saints, the writer who did not write, moved by feel alone, was eaten by his words, his own hand casting a line, drawing empty river. He felt a glow, not his, wrapping around him in the tavern, a silent salute from the strangers he loved and who loved him. The writer who did not write suffered to return, dragging his foot. The willow swayed a greeting ever so slightly. The shouts of little beggars with their sacks and jack-o'-lanterns spilled through the dusk as they flew past him, trampling the marigolds growing wild on his dead-end street. She held the screen door open as he approached the laughter of their children, the spoils of their pillowcases, fruits and candy, soul cakes spread across the floor. He stepped over their masks, handkerchiefs with holes for eyes and hobo shoes. The potatoes had yet to be peeled. His shirts were rinsing in the sink. He felt within his cheek and extracted a tooth, an ivory charm for his love to wrap in silver paper, in her hand, beating like a small drum, he placed it. The writer who did not write mounted the stairs. His children watched him faltering, his feet going on him. She followed and lay down beside him. He rested his head on her shoulder. A macabre magic filled the air. Little beggars raced from house to house, calling trick-or-treat, ringing bells, lacing the bushes with long veils of tissue. He dreamed of a fishing tournament, a muskie strung up on the back of a truck. It was a lucky day for the old fisherman, and he felt strung up as well and still aglow. It came in waves in his sleep, labor without pain, no life, no life anywhere, and the blood had a metallic smell like a freshly painted retabla framed in flowers, carved in sugar. She clipped a lock of his brown hair and wrapped it in the silver paper with his tooth in a gold ring. She made a reliquary of him. His half-empty can she drained into the mouth of the river. She flattened the tin and painted a fish hanging in the green sky. She sat in the grass where they sat in the night. The willows swayed a greeting ever so slightly as she prayed, not to God, but to him. The scars and stars scattered like a rosary, suddenly unstrung. Medals embossed with saints rained upon the grass. The little beggars filled with their sacks with them and handed one to her. Saint Federica, the writer who did not write, the patron of forsaken fields. My dove, your name is water in my hand. I will offer it with salt and bread and the charm extracted without resistance from your silent mouth. I will canonize your name for mysteries unsolved, words unborn, because you suffered. My Calavera, my sad, sad saint, my writer who did not write, because your beautiful sorrow sprouted like a stalk, blossoming calligraphy. The writer's song. Well, I've told this story a couple of times, but in case you didn't hear it, it's not the greatest story you'll ever hear, but it's a true story. When I was living in Michigan in the during the 80s, when my children were growing, my time off from all my domestic tasks were on Saturday afternoon. I had these two shows that I really loved, and they came one after another. One was called Martial Arts Theater, and then right after that, Kung Fu Theater. I loved these shows. Like, they had this guy, like, on the one, you know, he would, like, dress like Bruce Lee and say, you know, "Now today, Shaolin monks will be flying through the sky."
So I get a little, I get like a little bit of sake, you know, a little tekori of sake, get everything ready. I had my little plate with like little pieces of cheese and crackers, and nobody was allowed to bother mom because it was kung fu theater time. So I did this every Saturday, and one Saturday I was all excited, got everything ready, had an excellent new kind of bottle of sake and new, you know, those stone ground crackers and some brie or whatever I had. I was ready. Sat there, put on the TV, martial arts theater, not there, nothing. I mean, it was like another Cheers or something was on. So I was kind of upset. But, well, I thought, all right, I won't be greedy. I'll just wait for Kung Fu Theater. I wait. It's time. No Kung Fu Theater either. It was gone. They were both gone. They just, some infomercial on for some kind of, like, one of those vacuum cleaners that only weighs 6 pounds. I can't tell you how upset I was. I wasn't just upset that it wasn't there. I was really upset that the week before they didn't tell us. I mean, so, and then I waited the next week just to see if maybe or was just something went wrong. Or they never came on again. There was no closure, no, you know, the guy in like the kung fu suit didn't say, Patty and everybody else that's watching, happy trails, we won't be back. It was just over. Anyway, this poem isn't about that, but it does reflect my life at the time, in that short period. The writer's song. I did not wish to work, I did not wish to earn, but to curl with my jar in the sweet sorghum. I laid my mat among the reeds, I could hear the freemen call. Oh, my life, what does it matter? Will the reeds cease bending? Will the leopard turn? I had a horn I did not blow, I had a sake and another. I could hear the freeman drunk with sky. Would matter my cry? Will the moon swell? Will the flame shy? Banzai, banzai. It is better to write than die. In the blue crater set with straw, I could hear the freeman call. The way is hard. The gate is narrow. Would matter, I say, with the new mown hay my pillow? I had a sake. And another, I did not care to own nor rove. I wrote my name upon the water, nothing but nothing above. Banzai, banzai, it is better to write than die. 1,000 souvenirs, 1,000 prayers, set away in earthenware. We draw the jars from the shelves. We drink our parting from ourselves. So be we king or be we bum, the reed still whistles, the heart still hums. Well, I noticed, I don't know what the... Okay, that's enough. Really, I'm not in the mood, please. So, what was I gonna say? I noticed that there's a really nice book on of Jerry Garcia's paintings and drawings over there, which is a really, really nice book. I think Jerry would have been really proud of it. I actually forgot that I had written something for it. It's just a little thing, but the book is really nice. And so I thought, being there's a book for Jerry there, do a little song for Jerry. I'm sorry, I didn't wash my hair today, and I just... I don't mind having a bad hair day. Every day is a bad hair day for me, but then I have like, it's the worse than bad that I... But I like it because it, what was I going to say? I don't know. I had a good day today. I like got up at 8 o'clock in the morning and I was walking down, what's that street? Eddie Street or something. I think it was that street. I was trying to find coffee for a while. A little hard. And I passed the Elk Hotel. Wondered why I wasn't staying there. So anyway, this little song, I might have told this story before, so, you know, I hate to be redundant, but my mother used to tell stories, but my mother was really good because even if she told the same story over and over, she always told them with so much enthusiasm and from a slightly different angle that you always felt like you were hearing that Nat King Cole story for the first time. You might be, I was just wondering, I was thinking, they're all thinking, what Nat King Cole story? My mother did have a Nat King Cole story. This was her story. My mom was a really good singer, like a jazz singer, and long before we were born in the 30s. And she had a really great voice, which was destroyed by cigarettes, and she had throat cancer, but which didn't take her down or anything. It just took her voice down. But she was a beautiful singer when she was younger. And she would sing like, she like doubled as a hat check girl and a singer. You know, she would sing some tunes with the band and then either be a hat check girl or a cigarette girl. And one day, like these mafia guys took a liking to her and they said, they were going to take her down to Atlantic City because they were taking a look at some piano player and for one of their clubs. So they go down to Atlantic City, and my mom says, they go into this club, and there's this guy. And she said, one of the ugliest fellas I ever saw. And it's not my fault. That's what she said. And she said, she went over to hear him play piano, and she said he was, but also just radiated a specific kind of kindness. So she's listening to him play piano, and she thought he was really good. And he's playing piano for like an hour, and she's standing there. And then when everybody's sort of drifting away, and it's like 2 a.m. or something, he starts singing, and he sings this little song. Tangerine, you know, I don't know if you know it. Tangerine, anyway, Lenny probably knows it, but. So anyway, my mother says to him, what are you playing piano for? You should be singing. You're like one of the greatest singers I ever heard. And he goes, oh no, really? She said, very self-effaced in person. I'm a piano player. She said, no, you're a fantastic singer. Anyway, that guy, the ugliest person in show business, wound up being Nat King Cole. So my mother used to like to tell this story. So anyway, how'd I get into that? Oh yeah, it has no relationship to the Jerry Garcia story. I couldn't possibly segue them. or to make any pretense that there was any reason at all that I should have told that story. I must be channeling my mom, although I know my mother would be saying, "You didn't tell it right. You didn't say it." So anyway, the Jerry Garcia story is in the 80s when I was like a little down and various things were happening in my life, to say nothing that my hair was turning gray, which was, I knew I was going to get old, but I didn't. Watching one's hair turn different colors is really weird. Like, I went to the doctors and said, "Something's wrong with my hair." Actually, I think I have iron deficiency anemia or something. My hair's turning silver. And he said, "Yeah, it's called, you're getting old." Anyway, I was like a little down and just looking at myself, and I was, I don't know, having a bad laundry day, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, now I know what this is going to sound like. It's going to sound like people that say they see Jesus in a potato chip or something, but this actually happened. I had a distinct vision of Jerry just like smiling at me with like a twinkle in his eye, going like this with his hair. And right after that, this little song came in my head. And I don't write that many songs by myself, but this whole song came in my head. So I sat down and read it. And when I was done, I decided, because Jerry sort of seemed to give it to me, that I'd call it Grateful. And as I've often said, I truly am.
Ours is just another skin, simply slips away. You can rise above it, it will shed easily. It all will come out fine. I've learned it line by line. One coming wire, one silver thread, all that you desire rolls on ahead. Like a ship in a bottle, held up to the sun, sails ain't going nowhere. You can count everyone until it crashes into the earth, simply slips away. You can hide in the open, I just disappear. It all will come out fine. I've learned it line by line. One coming wire, one silver thread, all that you desire rolls on ahead. Ours is just a craving and a twist of the wrist. We'll undo the stopper with abrupt tenderness. Down in its barrel and awake singing. It all will come out fine. I've learned it line by line.
really nice to see you this evening. Lenny and I, we're going somewhere else, but I don't know where. Oh, the what? What's it called? Oh, I'm glad you know. The Victoria Theater or something. Anyway, we're going to go there and do some songs and poems and stuff. And I accidentally gave us two jobs on the same night without... My fault. Yes? Oh, thanks.
Take it easy, Lenny.
No, it's just a certain relative of mine was smirking at me. This little poem, I was in Rome when Jean-Paul II was passing away and was in the square when he passed away. And they had, his apartment had three windows and there were lights on and the people were all waiting in the square by the thousands. And when the lights went out, it meant that he had passed away. So this little poem was written when the lights went out. Three windows. In the garden of the fugitive, he knelt singing, "I am with thee." In his white cassock, he cried, "I pray for that brother who shot me." A black crucifix appeared as he lay dying. "Forgive me, I am one." Crape streamed from three windows, a flag dropped, bound in mourning. These words entered the heart. "You have come. The door is open. You will not find me. You will find my love." November 10th, Lenny and I celebrated the 30th anniversary of Horses. So perhaps before we go, Lenny and I could do one little song.
Shotgun faces, sad description
I was looking for you. Everyone was singing. Girl was washed up on Redonda Beach. And everyone was so sad. I went looking for you. Oh, are you gun? Pretty little girl. Everyone cried. She was the victim of sweet suicide. I went looking for you. Oh, are you gun? Down by the ocean, it was so dismal. Women all standing with shock on their faces. Sad description, oh, I was looking for you. Desk clerk told me, girl is washed up with smiling angel with apple blonde hair now. I went looking for you. Oh, are you gun? Pick up my key, tell her reply. Went to my room, started to cry. You were small and angel. Are you gun? Down by the ocean, it was so dismal. I was just standing with shock on my face now. The hearse rolled away. The girl that had died, it was you. You never returned into my arms, cause you were gun. Never returned into my arms, cause you were gun. Goodbye.
Lenny Kaye.